book of Ecclesiastes, of course, Birds and Turn, Turn, Turn. And we turn once again now for a fantastic individual, a soul who effectively has become, a national treasure, quite literally, because she is. She was, of course, responsible for opening the whole magic of the James Bond cinematic experience, but since then, of course, has moved on to do a whole heap of other things in all so many magical ways. We say, without any sort of hesitation whatsoever, the fabulous, amazingly wonderful Eunice Gayson. Are you there, Eunice?
Hi, how are you? All right?
We're very good indeed, Eunice, and good to actually connect with you once again in the sort of magical world of radio here. Because I know it's going to be a few weeks' time. We'll hopefully be connecting at the Matt Munro celebration, so that's going to
be
something to look forward
to. Great.
It'd be brilliant stuff. Now, I hadn't realised, and I'll do the introductions with the folk in the studio in a few moments, but I hadn't realised that actually when you married screenwriter Lee Vance on the United States television programme Bride and Groom, this was, I suppose, an equivalent to earlier reality television, because you actually sort of had your nuptials, quote, gawped at by several million Americans.
Well, I mean, the thing was, I was in a show in the West End playing second lead in a musical, and I wanted to fix a wedding date. They wouldn't give me any time off, and Lou Vance, who was my fiancé at that time, he was very good at ideas of how to make a negative thing positive, and he said, listen, I'm sure I can make a deal with the American company, Bride and Groom. I said, I've never heard of it. Well, he used to be the London correspondent of Variety magazine in America, so, of course, he was very familiar with it, and he had the right contacts. And next thing I know, bang, 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 he'd fixed it up. And to my absolute amazement, the management, the theatrical management I was working with, agreed. They thought it was a fantastic news. And so off we flew to New York to get married. And I, at that time, didn't really realize what was involved. Because I'd been told by the organizers of it in New York that it was just like an ordinary wedding service in a church, and then the ads would come in separately and independently, nothing to do with you. And what I didn't realize, because I'd had no experience of exploitation of this kind, was that there was a lot of publicity that went with the show, and because obviously the company was running it, that's why they were doing it. So I thought, well, I trusted Lee that if he said it was okay, and he, you know, it was a good way of having a nice wedding, you know, to go along with it. And then, of course, when we got to America, we were met by a bank of photographers and interviewers from all medium, because it coincided, which we had not even thought about, which we should have done, at least me should have done, because he was a TV correspondent, that the debate on commercial television was being held in the House of Commons in London. And, of course, there was a lot of opposition to commercial TV at that time. It seems strange now, but there was then. Mm. And
Before we know where we are, Eunice, we would have had television commercials left, right and centre for things such as toothpaste and all sorts of scenarios, etc. But still, I suppose it's possible. The thing that really appealed to me about this story, Eunice, and just moving on, was when in March 1956 you actually called a press conference in order to ceremonially tear up your contract with Rank, which I thought was wonderful. I just thought, just the very notion of actually calling a press conference to say, right, I'm just calling up this conference, and now... So just tear the paper up now.
the whole thing with rank seemed good on paper because I had script approval, which was rare in those days, but I was quite big on TV at the time.
Yeah.
And I suddenly realized these dreadful scripts that I was being offered. I said, you're joking, I couldn't do this, it's awful.
Yeah.
And this wasn't happening, and that wasn't happening. And I suddenly realized, my agent was Robin Fox with MCA. He said, I got a sneaking suspicion they offered you a very good contract to lure you away from TV. Mm. Because during the period of my contract with them, I wasn't allowed to do TV. And I said, you know, you could be right. And they put me under contract. And I lured me away from TV to get me away from TV. Would you believe that?
It's a strange and bizarre world, and that's why we always say when advising people who are entering the entertainment profession or the industry or the business of show, always make sure you read that small print. Always make sure you read that small print, because you don't...
Well, of course, there was nothing in small print.
Well,
if I wouldn't have gone into it, even for all the biggest money in the world, I wouldn't have gone away from TV because I was doing so well on TV, you know?
But you did obviously take part, as we said, in that iconic aspect of Sylvia Trenchard. Now I bring in Leslie, this particular stage, Leslie Furman, because Leslie, I think it's fair to say you're a Bond aficionado and you're delighted to effectively, you know, touch base with Eunice today.
Absolutely. Hello, Eunice.
Hi.
Hi, I'm a huge Bond fan, and I thought your performance in Dr. No, and obviously as well in From Russia with Love, was fantastic. I really enjoyed it. And we've got all of the Bond series, Francesca, who's my daughter, and I, and we've watched your performance over and over again. We never get tired of it, so, you know,
that's amazing. I'm amazed, you know, because I go to a lot of these James Bond conventions that Pinewood set up for me. We go all over the world for them, and the interest in the Bond movies is just as big and as strong as ever.
Yes.
And
yeah,
particularly the first ones, you know, Dr. No from Russia with Love, which I was both in, of course. And I mean, I cannot believe, and even when we have them here in England, you know, I say to people, where are you from? Oh, I am from Thailand. Thailand? You have come over from Thailand for this convention at Pinewood? Yes.
Wow, that's...
And where are you from? I'd ask somebody else. And they're from Botswana or somewhere like that. You know, you cannot believe it, how far they come for these conventions, which is amazing, you know, and it's just almost a way of life for them. They're part of the world family, really. There's a Bond world family outside of the film, but which they indulge in, and they follow you around the world. It's amazing.
It's incredible, isn't it? Well, when you were filming Dr. No, did you ever imagine how big the Bond films were going to become?
No, of course not, no. In fact, I was starring in The Sound of Music at the time at the Palace Theatre, and Rodgers and Hammerstein, who were my bosses in New York, wouldn't let me go away on location. So the director, Terence Young, wanted me in it. So he wrote this character of Sylvia Trench, and the idea was that Sean and I, Sean was signed up to do six at that time,
mm-hmm.
and I was signed up to do six, and the idea was that Shaw and I, just as we were, you know, getting together, he was always called away on sort of very secret business, whatever. And of course, it just so happened that Shaw didn't do six initially, and because his agent wanted more money, because he'd obviously been a great success in Dr. No, Home from Russia with Love,
mm-hmm.
and they would go along with it, which I thought was a bit mean of them, and Terence supported him in this, so both he, Terence, and Sean left, and so, of course, the whole idea because the whole idea was that Sylvia Trench, the character I played, which was obviously small because it had to be on while I was working in the theatre, it had to be during the day at Pinewood, couldn't go away on location, and it just got cancelled, the whole thing, once Sean and Terence left. And it was very disappointing for me, because when you're on a very long run, and we did have huge long run with Sound of Music, and I had a run-of-the-play contract. I was foolish enough to sign a run-of-the-play, because they told me originally that it wouldn't be running longer than a year in London. Of course, it went on for much longer than that. I was getting a bit bored with it, you know?
Yes.
When you play it, for a couple of years, it's too much.
Eunice, there's only a certain amount of time you can say do, re, mi, and you think, oh, for goodness sakes, just shut up. Just, Maria, just go away. You know, I can do no more. I am the Baroness. Let's get it sorted out. Why don't you just marry him now? That's the key thing.
Are you quarrelling?
No.
We're the best of friends.
Exactly.
And if you're not, why not?
Precisely. Now, I was quite intrigued, actually, to find that your daughter, Kate, also had a part in a Bond movie, obviously the first Bond movie that launched Pierce Brosnan on the world with GoldenEye.
Well, the thing was, Ian got in touch with her, and she'd had a certain amount of publicity because she was playing in The Mousetrap. When she studied drama at university and got 2 honours degrees in drama and theatre and all that sort of stuff. And Ian got in touch, and I suppose they thought it would be a good whiz, you know, to follow Mum. And so they wrote this little part in for her. And I did warn her. I said, now look, just because you've shot it doesn't mean to say it won't end up on the cutting room floor. And she said, what do you mean? I said, listen, sweetheart, always there's a loss of film that's shot because it doesn't fit in. And would you believe it's exactly what happened? When they showed a rough cut of that film, the powers that be decided that there wasn't enough action, physical action.
I feel as though I should get on the phone to Martin Campbell right now and say, hi, Martin, what are you playing around at? You know, let's have a director's cut with Eunice's Gayson's daughter, Kate, in that slot. We need to reinsert that footage, Eunice.
Well, I mean, the whole thing, the whole sequence that she was in was cut out. And she was devastated, you know. I did warn her. And but I mean that is typical of a show business, you know. Just because you shot it doesn't mean to say it'll be in the final film, because they decided to put in this terrific action sequence, and that there wasn't room for this other sequence that they had already shot. But there we go, that's show business.
It was probably a case of Pierce Brosnan wanted to drive his tank through Warsaw a bit more, that's all, but still, never mind. Life continues. We've still got to talk about the Saint Bids Diamonds and the Invisible Millionaire and a whole heap of other scenarios from that perspective. But, Jodie, have you got any questions you want to put to Eunice?
Yeah, Eunice, I just wondered, obviously you just said that your daughter's an actress as well. Were you quite pleased when she said to you, oh, Mummy, I want to be an actress, or were you, like, absolutely horrified and thought, oh, oh, I wish you'd go and do something like be a vet.
I wasn't quite sure. You see, the thing is, she was studying university direction, writing, because under the degrees that she was taking, she was at Warwick University, which is near Stratford, and so all the top directors and producers at Stratford were lecturing them, and she's much into the production side. And I said, and yet she also had her own theatre company when she was at university, and they went to the Warsaw Drama Festival and won the award. Uh-huh. And, of course, you know, it was her company, so guess what, who played the lead? She did. So, of course, she did very well out of it. And she suddenly realised that, she loved the idea of doing the performances, apart from writing and directing and producing. you know, which hitherto was her aim in the business. But I said, well, darling, look, whatever makes you happy, you go with. And, of course, you know, all these, I've just been thinking about this the other day. She did, apart from the mousetrap, which they always replace the actress or actor in the company after 6 months, and they asked her to stay on for a year because they said she'd played the part better than anybody ever had, blah, blah, blah. And so she was doing very well. Work was coming in. And then, of course, she met the guy she married. Guess what?
End of career, no doubt.
Oh, guess what? She was suddenly talking about family, babies.
Exactly. Oh, those family and baby scenarios.
I know. And, of course, she's now living in Spain. In fact, I've spoken to her this morning. It's beautiful, in case you want to know, in the south of Spain.
That's all right.
you know, she said, oh, well, we're going on the beach a bit later. What's it like now? So don't ask. It's dark and wet.
Well, that's... Look, Eunice, we're bringing some sunlight into the whole field. That's the key thing. In fact, we must sort of... you must let your daughter know next time you're back on the airwaves, because I'm sure she'll be able to listen live via the internet. So we'll work our way through that whole process.
Sure.
A question we put to Annette Andre last night on the Midweek Drive. Annette, obviously based in New York these days, but we asked her, because she actually appeared in five of the Roger Moore Saint series, in terms of how did she actually sort of relate Roger Moore to Ian Ogilvy as both the Saints. I'm going to actually ask from your own point of view, Eunice. Sean Connery, Roger Moore, you worked with both of them, obviously, both in The Saint and in James
yes.
Bond. Whom do you think actually made the better Bond, Roger Moore or Sean Connery?
I've been asked this question before, and I suppose the initial impact was Sean, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And he did it so well. And at last, the British cinema realised they had a very, very new, very wonderful new leading man, you know, in the offing. And that caused quite a stir. And I'd also seen Sean in the theatre. I opened in a show in Portsmouth, and he was playing down there, the theatre down there, as a straight actor. And God, he was wonderful in that. And I thought, guy, this guy is going to be so terrific in films because he's so gorgeous. And I mean, he was gorgeous. Now, the difference between Roger and Sean played it for real. Now, Roger, he's always light in his work. And there's a lot of Roger in the character that he plays. Whereas Sean, the part of Bond, was quite unlike anything. I'd known Sean for numbers of years. Was quite unlike anything in his personality. So I have to say that it cost more effort on Sean's part to play it the way he did than it did with Roger. They're both very, very effective, and I'm very fond of them both. I'm very fond of Roger. He's still a good friend. I still see him around. You know, we do conventions and things like that. But it if you can understand what I'm saying it rather badly, but I just feel that as an actor, it took more out of Sean to play and create that character than it does with Roger.
As ever, Eunice, I think a very perceptive answer there. Let's move to the next generation of actresses, young 15-year-old Francesca Furman. Fran, questions for Eunice.
Hi, Eunice.
Hi.
How does it feel knowing that, like, you were the first Bond girl, like, looking at all of them now and knowing that you were the original?
Well, as I say, at that time, we had no idea what it was. I mean, no idea it was going to be a big, big smash breakthrough film, which it turned out to be. So to me, it was just, oh, thank God I'm doing a film while I'm still in the theatre, you know, because you do get bored of playing the same part in the theatre for that long length of time. But, you know, all I can say is that I enjoyed it. I love working with Terrence, the director. I made a couple of other films with him, and he was always pleasurable. And I look forward to the future of that character, Sylvia Trench, so that by the time I was out of The Sound of Music, you know, because originally the idea was that Bond and I get together and get married. I mean, that was the whole conception for six films, he would be carried away whenever, you know, called away, not carried away. Called away. We didn't get together. We couldn't because, of course, I could film because I was in the show. So by the time we did get together, I would be out of the show. But, of course, it didn't happen. A, the show went on, and B, and I had run on the play contract, and B, Sean wasn't with them.
And that's the moment where we have to say those last two questions. Eunice Gayson, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us once again here on the Midweek Drive Morning Edition?
Oh, well, I'm always interested in talking about the business. It's a wonderful business. It's a lot of heartache, and it's a lot of... But it's wonderful. It's wonderful. If you can hack it, if you can hack the disappointment and the rejection, and that is very important. Not only your talent is important, but the rejection. You must be able to handle rejection. If you can't, then don't go into it.
You get those lemons, you make lemonade out of them. That's a key thing. Can we look forward to connecting with you again in the very near future, Eunice? Possibly in the next couple of weeks or so. Eunice Gayson.
Lots of love to everyone.
There we are. She will return. Fantastic stuff. Coming up next, the cast and indeed the choreographer from Glee.